Legacy Breakfast. I'm Stuart Taylor, and with me as always is Stuart Pullen.
Which episode is it, Stu?
No, you go hello.
Oh, I'm sorry, is that my place?
All ruined.
I've ruined it.
No, it's fine.
Okay, but this is episode 51.
So, do you say that bit first?
I do say that a bit first.
I was doing so well as well, I thought I'd nail it.
Okay.
Turns out your bit is harder.
No, it's not.
Than saying hello.
My bit is like asking you all the things and then you telling the listeners all the things. That's my bit.
Oh, yeah, that seems
exactly.
Seems reasonable to do also.
Are we on now?
Yeah, we do.
We're on. This is live.
We've got through the technical nightmare stage and we've gone straight to the blathering nonsense.
Okay, good. I'm just looking at the waveforms and I couldn't see any waveforms before when we just started.
Yeah, welcome to my world.
Where have the waveforms gone?
They've all disappeared.
Oh, God. Podcast. Yeah.
To cut a long story short, I tried to make my studio more professional and in doing it, I made everything stop working. That's basically the short story of that.
Again.
Sorry. Yes, again. Wait till I get my sick boom mic.
Oh, that's going to be amazing.
You can hold that, like, clamps onto the side of a table and you swing it down.
Yeah, with the pop shield on.
Be amazing.
Yeah.
I'll never get that.
Professional recording equipment.
Yeah, I'll just hold my SM58 like a good boy and get on with it.
Yes. Well, Mr. Host,
yeah,
please tell us what we're doing this week.
There's more.
There's more,
you
yeah.
Have to do more. Well, to this week, we're talking about finance.
Finance. Good.
Yes.
Good.
Do you want to take over?
Yeah, sure. I'm happy.
That's just a brief snapshot of what this show would have been like with me, like, comparing.
Yeah, we could do like a live start again if you want and keep it in the podcast.
No, I quite like that.
Okay, we'll keep it.
That's it, you know. I'm happy with my work.
Okay. Okay. So, yeah. Yes, welcome. Welcome, listeners.
It's still started again, though.
No.
You're undermining me now, Stu.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
No new listeners have been listening. Otherwise, they'll figure out, we're wondering what the hell was going on.
Yeah, if you didn't get what just happened, go back and listen to the last 50 episodes. And then you will.
Indeed. This week, we decided we were going to talk about something which we don't know anything about at all.
Like normal.
Well, no, not like normal. We know lots about legacy normally.
Yes.
We thought we would talk about finance in general and how it applies to legacy. MTG finance. We're not going to give you like mortgage advice and stuff.
Yeah, no. Yeah. Cards haven't yet become so expensive that you need to do HP, like hire purchase agreements on them. Like.
That's interesting you say that. I can see, like, for vintage tournaments, I can definitely see a market for that. Like, the vendors, I'll give you $50 to hire your Lotus for the tournament. Like, or here's an even larger, like, a realistic deposit where that would be.
Yeah. I guess the deposits would have to be so high because people just would not bring them back otherwise.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, then.
Yeah, but the deposit would basically have to be the
value of the card.
The value of the card. Yeah. But that value of the card could be in cards.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Like, here's my folder.
Yeah, here's your folder, borrow your power.
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, we'll do that. We'll set up a business. We'll do that.
We need some power.
Oh, yeah.
Crap.
And the capital to travel to various places within Europe for GPs.
For vintage tournaments. Yeah.
So not much of a budget then.
Yeah, so we get emails every now and again asking about, like, what are good budget decks. Mm. And I think we've probably addressed that in part, like, just by answering those questions. So we're probably not going to talk about so much about that.
Yeah.
But what we thought we'd do is take some, like, some concepts, how they apply to legacy in particular, and, like, thinking about a good time to get your cards as well.
Yeah, so like, a really long-term view. Like, we're not going to be like, oh, you should all buy this card now because it's crazy cheap. But actually just thinking about how you develop your collection actually, like, as an entity, and I guess to have some magic speak, like, how can you get the best EV, like, what kind of times a card's going to be cheaper than other times?
Yeah.
What influences a card's price? Like, if you can work that out, then you've got a good shot at knowing when it will go up or down.
A good example from Limited Resources would be that they advocate what's called the slow bleed way of playing MTGO.
Hmm.
So that if you get good enough to, like, okay, so the best players can do what's called going infinite,
yeah,
where they win enough that they are able to sell their packs that they win for tickets to carry on playing events, and they don't ever have to put money into MTGO.
And I mean, in a way, like Magic Online is kind of more geared to that, in that there are like bots and trades and things, but like, I imagine if you set it up properly, you sell them at an actual price or like whatever the going rate is.
You kind of have to set it at market rate, because otherwise, because the demand, because the supply is so high.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I've literally got no idea what goes on in Magic Online.
Generally, card prices are a lot lower unless they're like things like Wasteland, which were only printed
or
once.
Or Vindicate.
Online. Yeah,
which is a bit crazy.
Craziness. Things like that. Mm-hmm. But sorry, to go back to it, the slow bleed is that you expect that you're not going to be good enough to go infinite, but you're going to have to put in money every now and again just to sort of top yourself up. So that's the sort of thing. Well, like,
in real life, you can kind of do it as well, in the sense
sort
that
of
if you keep on like cashing out of tournaments, even if that is for store credit, then you just use that to pay for the next tournament.
Yeah, yeah,
and kind of be infinite.
Yeah, and then if you decide to play it out one week and take the jackpots, then you've got you want to try and get cards where you can kind of minimize, like at the where they're going to be cheapest, really, or where you can see some return on your investment in the future.
Yeah,
yeah,
for sure.
I
guess it's worth saying we're not really talking about speculating.
No.
Although I guess that would be to do with this if people are feeling a bit more fruity.
What's your best spec ever?
My best spec? Well, the thing is, I don't really have very much money.
Yeah.
I mean, so I guess that's where I'll start. And I did speculate on Deathrite Shamans. And a speculate for me was I bought four of them. When I had no reason to, like, there was no deck I was building with them. Like, I thought, at worst, then I'll have like a playset of them. But I got them very cheap, and it took people a little while to twig on how good they were, particularly in Legacy. Mm. And so I did okay from that. My best trading chain, I think, was, and this is a good example of like what we'll be talking about later in many ways, like. I managed to get hold of Fire and Lightning, the Burn pre-constructed premium
deck suits.
I managed to get four of those cheap, and mainly for the Lava Mancers, like, and the Chain Lightnings.
Yeah.
But like, it kind of worked out. Even if I just had those cards and kind of ditched everything else, it worked well. And then I managed to trade those Grim Lava Mancers for Bobs, which then spiked. Modern was announced, and then I traded those Bobs into two Tropical Islands, basically.
Wow.
Like a couple of Bobs and a couple of Fetches.
So you traded like 80 quid's worth of deck into what's a trop these days, 140, something like that.
Yeah.
So two, like, nearly close to 300 quid's worth.
Yeah,
that's pretty good.
And I mean, that's over a period of years. And that's the thing. I think if you do speculate, I think it's important to pace yourself with it. I remember I offloaded my Show and Tell when it first became $50. I only had the one.
Mm-hmm.
And it turned out that was a terrible idea. I actually did it as well before a banned announcement.
Yeah, because you were thinking it was
going to get banned.
Yeah.
And so I decided to offload it. I probably would have got rid of them then. Like, they would have really crashed. Like, they're not played in Vintage. Like, they would have become peanuts.
All of our best specs have been to do with Heather. Actually, she's got like a real life for getting them.
The shiny things tend to spike more.
When Innistrad was released, we bought like 7 or 8 Liliana of the Veils. So we bought a playset and like opened one in the pre-release. And then we traded 4 Lilianas for 4 Flooded Strands, 2 Polluted Deltas, and 2 Wastelands.
Well, of course.
So that was very, very good. Then I think also, like, if you happen to be able to find cards that spike at a Pro Tour, like, for cheap, you can make quite a lot of money if you can get all of them. That's not so much these days, because everybody tends to watch them.
If you can kind of identify some... If you can identify a deck that's really good but underplayed before somebody breaks it, then the card in it will be ridiculous.
You mean if you can find some sort of golden egg? Yes.
Yeah. Exactly. Golden eggs.
Okay, so generally, cards are... You've got to know... Like, the fundamental thing, I guess, for new cards at least, is you have to know the cycle of how cards are released.
Yeah.
So that used to be the case that you'd know that there'd be a block released every year, a core set, a summer promotional product, and then you'd start again with another block in at the end of it.
Yeah.
So, the biggest influence on like standard legal cards is rotation. So would you like to talk about rotation? What that actually means?
Yes. Rotation is when things rotate.
Yeah.
So the way standard traditionally has operated, which has changed, is about to change.
Yeah.
They used to have, well, back in the dark days, they used to have one core set. And then they would release sets, obviously, in blocks of three expansions, would you call them?
Like a large set and then two small sets.
Yeah.
Two, a block would be the main one and then two expansions, yeah.
Yeah, so which is important for drafting, the way they're released, in the sense that you want like a broad card pool that you can then build on with the other ones when you release them for drafting like purposes, I guess.
Do you remember when the core set used to hang around for 2 years?
Yeah, I used to love it.
Yeah, and it would be... Bops. It would be all reprints.
Yeah, but I mean, I actually quite like that, though. Like, in the sense that I like that the core set offered, like, really well, the core of Magic. Like,
yeah.
Shock your bear. Like, again, like that. Like, so you'd always have that reference point. Mm. And, like, when I think of kind of quite surreal draft formats, like Scars of Mirrodin, like... I heard it was a really good draft set if you knew what was happening. but actually, like, the actual specific, like, you needed to know the format in a way which you don't when you play core, because it's so fundamental to the Magic.
So the big
sort of situation.
The big change that's happened was, well, the big change that happened originally was that the sort of the Magic 2010 etc. Sets were released. So they tidied up a load of rules, then announced that they were going to do 50% reprints, 50%
took damage
new
off
cards,
the stack.
Like things like that. Yeah, changed a few of the other rules, and then tried to make the sets attractive. And then because they didn't really work, because they weren't like reprint. They were supposed to be the players new players entry into Magic, but it was all reprints. There was a lot of,
which I mean, would be with their way of kind of
they weren't.
I want to call it quantitative easing, actually.
They weren't engaging like current players with the core set. Nobody liked it because it was underpowered. It wasn't exciting.
I don't know, like it's really weird that, like, I mean, again, slight aside, like, I actually really like drafting core sets.
Yeah, it's really, I think I like it as a palette cleanser between blocks. Anyway, we're back getting massively sidetracked. So what's going to happen is that the core set is no more, so it's going to be replaced by another block. Mm. And they've got rid of the third set of blocks. So the way it's going to work from now on is that there's going to be a large set, then a small set, then a large set, then a small set. And I think there's three of those that are going to be in standard. So three blocks.
Okay.
Is it? I think. Or is it? No, it's two blocks, sorry. Yeah, because the small sets replace the core set.
Oh, right.
And so then there's going to be a continual rotation of those sets. So when the... say Khans of Tarkir and Fate Reforged. Mm. So we'll start from Khan Standard. There'll be Khans of Tarkir, Fate Reforged, then Dragons of Tarkir. That's the last third set ever. Yeah. Then there'll be a big block and then a small block.
Okay.
And that'll be the standard. And then when Khans rotates, the whole Khans block goes out, and then the next big set will come in, and that'll be standard.
Yeah, because like, thinking in terms of like the prices of cards, one of the factors, well, I was going to say, I imagine, like, that seems very definitely the case, is when a card stops being standard legal, obviously it will take a bit of a hit to the its value.
Yeah.
But how do you think, I mean, Modern changed that a little bit maybe, but how do you think the new set rotation will impact that? Like, how do you think that will affect card prices as they rotate?
The short answer is, because there's no precedent, nobody really knows, and everybody that claims to is just speculating wildly. I'd say so cards are going to be in standard, I think, slightly less, I believe. Yes, they're going to be in by like one half block less, I think. Yeah. So it means that they're sort of the natural evolution of a card's price will just be compressed into that time.
Okay. Yeah, it would just happen sooner if it rotates. Sooner.
I think that's the most I could probably speculate.
Interestingly, I think it might have an impact on power level.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the Wizards might be persuaded that if a card's going to ruin standard basically for less time,
yeah, they might do something more swingy.
Then they might do something. And obviously, like, people are going to want to open packs for those cards, which will affect their sales.
Yeah,
because everybody will be opening boxes. So in that sense, I think there might be more boxes opened as Wizards try to push the power level.
Maybe, yeah.
Which will decrease the price of the kind of mid-powered rare, shall we say?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, the Chase Mythic is going to go up and up and up in price.
Yeah.
But actually, the more kind of staple cards that might filter their way down into Legacy, I think might actually decrease slightly.
Okay,
on average.
I've got two things to say. Right, so I'll address that one and then there's something I want to say.
Yeah.
So there's only so much value that can be opened in a set. So the set, the sum total of the cards has to be constant. It's a zero-sum game sort of thing. So,
yeah.
Like, if you've got...
Because a booster will always be £3 or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. So, and also, like, if people are buying, want all the mythics, then they don't want the rares. So the rares will go down.
Yeah.
So that it just kind of, it works itself out sort of thing. So when you've got a set with quite a high power level overall, you'll probably find that all the rares are a lot cheaper than you think they should be.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of them about. But it's quite important to sort of...
Just interestingly, do you know, I don't know if you... do Wizards do a set print run and then reprint, or do they literally print to demand levels, whether they're perceived or like actual?
I think to meet things like pre-release and early supply, they will have to do a set print run, just because they need to ship the product.
Mm.
And then I don't know how it works. I guess they will print until there will be some stock, and at some point they will stop printing. I don't know. If you guys know, then let us know. That'd be interesting, but like,
because if people bought loads of boxes trying to find mythics, then
which is a bad idea. But anyway,
a pretty bad idea. But then, but I mean, somebody somewhere has got to, because otherwise they won't ever get in circulation.
No, drafting.
Yeah, but I mean, they're still opening product. Yeah. Like whether if they perceive that's happening, whether they like start to overproduce, basically.
I'm sure they know. Like I think they probably made enough mistakes with things like Chronicles. It's worth mentioning that this is basic economics, isn't it? And it's as such, the price of something is driven by two factors largely, which is the supply and the demand.
Hmm.
So for you guys that might not have done any sort of economics, so
me,
some people have, some people haven't.
Didn't even do home economics.
Can't cook, which is completely useless.
Can't cook.
Okay, cool. So clearly, if we said tomorrow that we're going to give everybody a Black Lotus, what do you think would happen to the price of Black Lotus? Obviously,
I think it would go down.
It would probably go down because the supply is massive. But at the moment, the demand for Black Lotus is very high and the supply is very low.
Well, you say that.
Well, it's high relative to the supply.
Yeah.
There are more people that want it than there is supply.
That's true. That's
which
true.
Has caused the price to go up. So it's all the basic economics-y stuff.
Hmm.
So when's a good time to buy that new Chase Mythic that's just been released in your set?
Oh, pre-release.
No! No, you don't understand this at all, Stu.
I thought I had a handle.
So generally speaking, you don't want to be going for pre-order prices.
Think of it. You're in it for the long game.
Yeah.
I mean, it's going to be true that there's going to be decks that you want to build with new cards because new cards are exciting. And if there's particularly like something, you know, like a powerful rare that makes its way into Legacy, which does happen.
What's the last time? What can we think of something like that where we've known from the start that something is going to be very powerful?
Snapcaster Mage, maybe.
Yeah, that's a good shot. Yeah.
It was clear it was always going to be powerful, and it was clear it was going to be played. Like, nobody had ironed the numbers out or where necessarily, but I think that that was always good. In fact, people tried to play it everywhere at the start, I remember. Mm-hmm. Which I guess is most people's reaction, because they want to play it because it's
something
cool. Yeah,
people like to play cool new cards, shiny cards. But so if you pre-order, you're paying a price when there is zero supply. So you're just filling the shopkeeper's dreams. You're just funding his children through college.
Yeah, I mean, even if you did desperately want some cards, I would hesitate before pre-ordering them. Unless you think there's one that's snuck through. Or if something's not going to be relevant to standard in any way, shape, or form, it's possible that it's pre-order... prices are going to be very, very low.
Yeah. I think I think what drives this is the Jace factor.
Yeah.
So when Jace the Mind Sculptor was printed, like nobody cottoned on I wasn't playing at the time, so I don't know, but the urban legend goes that nobody really knew quite how good this card was. And so you could pre-order them for $20-$30. Like, it was a Mythic Planeswalkers.
Well, but even that's pretty okay.
Yeah, but then it...
Also, don't forget that this phenomenon is actually relatively recent.
It's
certainly within like the last 5 years.
Hmm. I think with the advent of Mythics, it's probably...
Yeah, but things seem to like really hyperinflate at the drop of a hat. And I mean, you can speculate as to why that is.
People are more aware of finance and there's lots of demand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't know, but it seems relatively modern in that sense.
So everybody wants to try and get a bargain because they want to try and beat the pre-order price. That's why.
Yeah, beating the spread.
Yeah, it's not a good long-term strategy.
You're not going to beat the spread of thing. And like I say, like it's nice to think of my Legacy collection as a collection, and it evolves and it grows and it builds and I can build more decks. And maybe it takes 2 years actually to get the cards that I want for it, but I'll always get the cards I want for somehow.
Yeah. So buying at the start when pre-ordering is a bad idea straight away when the cards are released is a bad idea because the supply is so low. So you want to try and maybe wait until at least till like a reasonable amount of them have been opened, and people have started to make their way in.
Yeah, it's also possible that that the cards that everybody thought were bonkers weren't bonkers all.
Yeah.
And I mean should we do a good example of that, because there is one.
We're going to do a couple of examples. So we're talking...
Well, I mean specifically that one, like Temporal Mastery.
Yeah.
Like Temporal Mastery, I think, was...
Do you want to say what it does?
Starting... Oh, gosh. Nothing.
It does nothing at all.
It literally reads 2 mana.
Do nothing.
Do nothing. Is it an 8 mana sorcery?
7 mana.
7 mana sorcery, Miracle. And its Miracle cost is 1 blue, 1 colorless. Take another turn after this one? Is it target player? Yeah. I think it's just take another turn, isn't it?
It's just take another turn, yeah.
And so people were thinking that it could potentially be like played very widely and lead to all kinds of broken nonsense, because playing 4 time walks in Legacy would be crazy.
So this is what happened to the price. This is courtesy of MTG Goldfish. So it started off about 20... let's do the paper price. And not to do the online price, because that would be a very bad idea. Okay, so it started off pre-ordering for around $40 for about a week or two. Started to go down, and then at the time that Avacyn Restored was released, it went to $30 and then spiked back up again very quickly for just the time that it was pre-released, up to about $35. Then it... basically it's just been in free fall since then. So if you bought at 40, it's never gone back to above 40 ever. It took a slight bump when it rotated out of stand just before Return to Ravnica was released. It kind of stabilized a bit, but then since then it's been tailing away.
It's currently
worth $5.88.
Yeah. And I mean, I got mine substantially later than when it was released. even if that card was as crazy as the potential of it made out, it still wouldn't be like a $70-$80 rare. It would still be like about that $40 mark.
Yeah.
Like, so in that sense, even if you pre-ordered it, I mean, again, going back to game theory, like the best outcome is you
wait.
Well, the best outcome is you say you have the same money, and the worst outcome is you lose all your money.
Yes,
and we're talking like hundreds of dollars.
That's $160, isn't it? If you pre-order four,
so it's
excuse me.
If you can not get carried away with the hype of things, and even just leaving things a fortnight, like sometimes is enough to see what works and what doesn't.
So the one of the things that's in our favour, as you can tell by our set reviews, is that there aren't actually that many legacy playable cards that are released in sets.
Yeah.
Because Wizards doesn't want to fill their standard sets with legacy playable cards.
Also, like, legacy playable cards don't necessarily work in other formats.
Yeah, sure.
And like in the same way that like standard cards don't always work in legacy formats. And so the best situation for the legacy player collector is obviously something very powerful in legacy and not in standard. I'm thinking of something like Treasure Cruise, which actually is
it's a common.
Well, it's a common, so it's not a great example. But I presume it was played in standard. I haven't looked at standard for ages.
It is played in standard, and it's fine because you can't
accelerate your graveyard so quickly. But actually, if that card was printed at rare, that would have been, how much do you reckon that would have been worth if that was a rare?
Just on
the level of its like legacy playability.
It probably would have gone, like, the problem is there's so much going on, but Khans of Tarkir is the most open set ever for Magic. So at the moment, the supply is huge.
Yeah.
The demand for four Treasure Cruises would have been nuts. So, but it would still have been a rare. So, like, I think what you'd say, something 15 quid tops, like no more than that.
I would have thought like 20-25.
Really? Wow, for a rare.
Yeah, well, I mean, rare's
I suppose, like, if you look at Snapcaster Mage, that was 20 when it came out. Yeah, that seems reasonable. Yeah. Okay.
That was played in standard, and
that's something I wanted to say. So, like, what's going to determine a card's price is how many formats it is going to see play in. So, Snapcaster Mage is playable in every format.
Yeah. Not a pauper. Oh, got you out in illegality.
Ooh, it's technically correct.
the best form.
Yeah. So, but then something like Siege Rhino, say, is very good in standard, very good in modern, probably not so good in legacy.
I've seen a few rock decks knocking about with some rhinos in them.
Yeah.
Yeah, they tend to bake it and then be killed.
Yep.
So, the card itself is fine. If it was 3-mana, it'd be playable in legacy.
Yes. This is the ridiculousness. The Siege Rhino is acknowledged to be basically one of the best creatures ever printed, and it's not playable in Legacy.
Really?
It's
best creatures ever printed?
It's like Bloodbraid Elf if it always cascaded into Lightning Helix that only targeted your player, and it was a 4/5 trample.
The trample actually is probably the best part of it for Legacy.
That
trample over Mom, trample over True Name.
4/5 trample for 4 mana that Lightning Helixes you. Your opponent, and that's not good enough for Legacy.
It's marginal. It does see play, and it probably should, but it's marginal.
Okay, so
imagine 3-mana Hierarch, that guy.
We did sort of minutes and minutes ago talk about rotation. So rotation is when standard cards kind of finish their time in standard. So if they're not going to see play in other formats, then their prices take quite a substantial drop. Even if they are going to see play in Eternal formats, their prices still take a drop because the major
players,
driver is
standard
gone.
Players tend to get rid of their cards at that stage. And obviously then, again, supply and demand thing, there's going to be more cards in circulation for modern and legacy players to hoover up.
Yes. So that is new cards, but there are other types of cards that, and other mechanisms for getting cards into print.
Yes,
card. So we've kind of categorized, and this is probably not a definitive list, but we've kind of brainstormed what we think are types of cards that see play in Legacy. So, cards that have been printed in Standard we'll call new cards. Then,
kind of a little bit patronizingly.
Yes,
the new cards.
New cards
for new players.
All right. Neuer card? I don't know. Some sort of
tick
synonym. So then at the other end of the spectrum, cards that see play in Legacy, reserve list cards?
Yeah, that's pretty much the other end of the spectrum of cards that are available or not available,
as the case may be.
Yeah, what can you say about reserve list? What can you say about the reserve list that won't start some kind of
legal
internet flame war?
Yes.
Is it actually legally binding? Like, I think they did institute something to do with that.
They've made a statement.
Yeah.
They are now have stopped talking about it because
quite sensibly
they've made a statement saying they're not going to talk about it anymore.
Was that their statement? We are no longer going to talk about the reserve.
They did make that statement. Yeah. The situation would be that if they did, the speculation is that if they abolished the reserve list, then they would get sued by collectors for the value, and because they've made a statement in a public forum, there's a fear that it could be actually defensible in court.
Wow.
So
that seems kind of weird to me. Like, I know it's a different legal culture.
I'm not a lawyer.
There,
if you are a lawyer and this is complete rubbish, then let me know.
Yeah, but I mean, it's got interesting implications.
Yeah.
Like, I think they won't reprint it no matter how much people want them to.
It does leave
a lot of scope in the sense that they could print a Snow Jewel.
Yeah, they said they wouldn't do functional reprints as well.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, then they won't do that then. No.
It's a shame. It's a very divisive topic.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we should also make a public statement that we won't talk about it too much, because it were like people do get really passionate about this. Mm. I mean, just to state my side, which I guess might be the opposite to you. Like, I think I kind of am in favour of the reserve list in a very broad way. Like, it's taken me years to get my Legacy collection together with blood, sweat, and tears, mm-hmm. and even just something like Fetches being reprinted. While, like, I don't begrudge people who have, like, bought Fetches, but it took me, like, years to get my Fetches together.
Mm-hmm.
And, got my Fetches. Like, suddenly people have got full sets of Fetches before me.
Yeah.
Like, still, I've still not loaded up on Fetches. I should do that. Mm. But you see what I mean? Like, actually, in terms of the game, I think it makes the game healthier, the reprint, and it's obviously great. And in many ways, like, again, my card prices are much higher than they were at the beginning, so... I've still made a profit even at the drastically reduced rates of what Fetches, for example, are doing. It's hard to strike a balance. I think I'd be a bit peeved, but I guess, I mean, ultimately, if more people are playing, I think I'd kind of be happier.
I'd be ecstatic, because
it would just be like a shame. It'd be like it would feel I feel like I've really achieved something with my Legacy collection. Like, it's really
the thing
nice.
Is, you still have like because you've still got all the original printings of those cards.
Yeah.
So if that's the case, then yeah, you've achieved something.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what it is.
It's the fact that they're worth lots of money, Stu. That's what it is.
I don't think it is, because I don't think I'd sell them.
Okay.
Like, in the sense that unless they became like £4,000 a jewel or something. Like, I actually I don't know. I just don't think I'd sell them, because if I sold them, I know I'd never get them back if the prices were high.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I would literally never rebuy Underground Seas at the current rate that they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I sold them, I would no longer have Underground Seas. And if they became worth £5 each because they were reprinted basically as the basic land in each set for the next 10 years, I mean, they'd become £5, right? They wouldn't even be that. They'd be like 50p.
Mm-hmm.
Then I wouldn't sell them because they'd be worthless.
Mm-hmm.
But either way, I've got them and I can play them. And so in that sense, like, the monetary aspect, like, isn't... I think I am actually, like, a collector.
Yeah.
Like, I enjoy...
I'm the same. I like my collection. I'm happy about it. But at the same time, that I want to be, say, in 20 years, I'd quite like to still be playing...
Quite like to retire to the South.
No. I'd still quite like... Well, if they abolished the reserve list, that wouldn't happen. But, like, I'd still like to think that Legacy has a future. And I'd can you honestly say that in 20 years' time, if... It's not going to increase in demand because there's literally not enough jewels to go around.
It's interesting. I mean, they made Modern to fill role, didn't they?
But Legacy is, in my opinion, very biased one. But it's a much better format because of the cards that are in it. So I enjoy
it's the
playing
magic
it.
We kind of know and love.
Exactly,
like, if you've been playing it for years, it's the magic you remember rather than
sure
permanence, do things.
So
powerful creatures, what nonsense!
I am. like, for me, I would be willing to put aside some sort of personal inconvenience in terms of finance for the sake of more people playing Legacy.
Yeah.
But that's me. But not everybody feels like that.
But again, like, we shouldn't go on too much about it. But just to say, just to bring out the old argument, like, if you keep up with Standard for a couple of rotations, you could probably have got a good Legacy deck and a half.
Yeah, exactly. And we've said that, just, like, stop drafting for a bit and then you do it. So there's reserve list cards. So those are cards that aren't going to see print ever again, presumably.
Yeah, and there's most of the reserve list is playable. There's some weird ones. But I mean, I think there's a lot of stuff in Legends. The Legend set that is on the reserve list.
There is some stuff that has absolutely no right being on the reserve list. There really is. But anyway.
I guess the reserve list, they actually, because they reprinted Legends as Chronicles, didn't they?
That was the first reprint
that they did, in essence. And so maybe there's a bit of a hang up from that.
That caused a lot of controversy, because of the prices took a hit. Anyway, so that's the sort of card that sees play in Legacy. So we're talking things like Dual Lands or
Chains of Mephistopheles,
Caracas, that sort of stuff.
All Legends.
Cards that aren't ever going to be printed again, and so therefore can only go up, assuming that demand stays the same or increases, like in price.
Yeah. And Legacy is becoming more popular. I mean, maybe some SCG stuff, maybe Legacy's popularity takes a bit of a hit, in which case that would free up some of those cards, which would be interesting. Also, like, a lot of the cards on the reserve, like Chains of Mephistopheles, I mean, I don't know why I'm using this as an example, but you'd be hard pushed to play a playset of them, even if you wanted to. Whereas you might want to play three Caracas in, like, Death and Taxes or something.
That's a good
and
point
so
to
the,
make.
The relative value of that you'd expect to be higher, but isn't for some reason.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Like, it's not only... So the fact of that you don't want to play four of every card in some circumstances, so that will affect the price as well. Then we've got things that are, like, very out of print but not on the reserve list. So things like...
Nimble Mongoose? That's not a good example.
It's an uncommon. Things like Imperial Recruiter. It's from Portal Three Kingdoms.
Yeah, it's not. Is that not on the reserve list?
It's not on the reserve
list. There are a few things that are surprisingly not on the reserve list, isn't there?
There's lots of stuff that's not on the reserve list, which is why it's a farce.
Is Force not on the reserve list?
No, Force isn't on the reserve list.
That's something like they could reprint Force.
Yeah, they could definitely do that.
And it would see no play.
In Standard.
probably would see play.
Okay, so let's have a look at Imperial Recruiter. So that is a set that's extremely scarce.
Portal Three Kingdoms.
Yeah, Portal Three Kingdoms. It's played as a four of in Imperial Recruiter decks, Imperial Painter.
Imperial Painter,
Alurin. Yeah, I knew you were going to say that.
Four of.
So, currently...
to be honest, there's even, like, a Sweet Humans deck. There's, like, Naya Humans is, like, a really strange deck that actually looks quite good but needs four Imperial Recruiters.
So, the price of... the MCG Goldfish, which is where we're getting the prices from, doesn't go back far enough to show the whole price. But basically, it's been above $200. It's been up to sort of highest about 300, I think, at some point. Yeah, 300 and a bit.
Yeah. The portal and the starter cards were really, really limited print runs. Like, so I don't know if they're a great example per se of that bracket of cards, but it certainly highlights how extreme it can be.
Yeah.
You know, if you try and get hold of, like, a Grim Tutor or Imperial Recruiter or...
The difference for a Grim is because you only tend to need one or two of them.
Yeah.
So the price will be lower. And it's played in, like, one deck, isn't it? It's ad nauseum.
Yeah.
So there's that class of cards.
Yeah.
Then we've got what we've
called... there is another end to that. Because Nimble Mongoose actually is in that category of cards. Like, it's an older card that hasn't been reprinted. The fact that it's, like, an uncommon,
I'd say, because
it
was in
£5 or something, $5.
Yeah, but I mean, it was a standard legal card at one point. Like, yeah. It's never been... Imperial Recruiter has never been standard legal.
Had been invented yeah. by the time it came out.
Yeah, exactly. Whereas Imperial Recruiter for Portal, like, that whole product was never meant to be played in standard. So it's one of those sort of products.
Bring out your horsemanship, guys.
Exactly. Good in cube. Really good in cube.
Oh, yeah. No, there was... There was a card. I can't remember why this was relevant, but there was. Is there a card that gives something else a keyword, like in Conspiracy or Unhinged or something?
I don't know.
Give it horsemanship every day of the week.
Boom. So we've got special sets in inverted commas. So this is like the promotional sets that Wizards release every year. Mm. So things like Commander. Things like Plane Chase.
Arch Enemy!
Yeah. So they often include...
Can we just have a moment for the names of Arch Enemy cards? Like the actual Arch Enemy cards are like...
The schemes.
Yeah. Fear my dark mighty powers. Like the names of all the cards are amazing.
I've only ever played like Arch Enemy on the iPad. I've not played it in person.
I played a game of like random decks. Not even EDH, just random things that we found. EDH... Not EDH, like just random things we found. Plane Chase, Arch Enemy.
Awesome.
And I remember there was some world where you had like loads of goats. Yeah. And it was all about goats, and I could use goats.
Goats are good.
Yeah, it's all about goats. Feel my mighty power of goats attacking you. Well, aren't your goats not one? Yes.
Shh. Shh. There's an Orchestra of Flame in play. So these are sort of... an avenue that Wizards have said that are deliberately for getting cards into Eternal formats, like by the back door, so they don't have to print. They won't see standard play.
Shardless Agent would have destroyed any standard format. Yeah, it was a part of. I'm certain.
It's got a busted mechanic, like things like Flusterstorm, Shardless Agent, True Name Nemesis, that sort of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I don't like True Name Nemesis anyway.
Well, we do.
Ugly card.
But there's that sort of card. So. The issue with let's look at something like Flusterstorm.
It's interesting that those cards though as well. Thinking of Scavenging Ooze particularly. Yeah, I got my Scavenging Oozes when they were pretty high because I needed them for like a tournament. It was a GP, I think, and so I had to get the two. I just had to get the second ooze because the deck didn't really work that well without it.
Mm-hmm.
And so again, it got reprinted in 10th, was it? Not 10th, 14th or something?
The latest,
So it was printed in a core set, so it still does have that capability to be incorporated into standard.
Yeah, it doesn't mean that they won't get reprinted. Well, I'm pretty sure they won't reprint Flusterstorm or Shardless Agent. But,
yes.
So Flusterstorm, for example, that was like 11, 12 bucks when it was released, and it's just been on a steady climb ever since. Because
it's like a counter spell with a storm mechanic, like a spell PS but with storm.
Yeah. So, it has a judge foil printing, so there was a slight I think plateauing in the price, but it's just been going up.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. Like thinking about the Imperial Recruiter as well, because that had a judge print.
Yeah.
And I think they did make judge printings like immune to the reserve list or something.
Yeah, they don't class them as that because it's not a standard legal printed type thing.
Yeah, and I remember when the judge promos first came out, they were $30, and now they've crept up to about the same price as a normal one.
Yeah, just because of supply and now they're being screwed away.
It's one of those things. Like a couple of times, I nearly just bought them. Like I hate buying cards.
Yeah,
and so it's one I regret. Not having done again, like it's probably worth to speculate for value, even if you don't end up using them.
Yeah, if you've got lots of money.
I mean that's the point, isn't it? But I mean, even if you don't have lots of money, like if you actually want to use it as a bit of a stock market, I don't know how much I would recommend this. But it's if you know your onions and you know what you're doing, and you take these kind of factors that we're talking about into consideration. And you can spot when things are going to go up.
If you are interested, there's plenty of MTG finance writers out there. There's quietspeculation.com. That's a subscription place. So pay some money, go read the articles there. There are plenty of examples of people that have turned this into their livelihoods, make money out of this.
It doesn't surprise me the way prices are going.
Yeah. Okay, so then we've got modern legal cards that are not likely to be reprinted. So things like Vendilion Clique, Tarmogoyf, that's going to be reprinted. Well, yeah, it's Modern Masters.
It's reprinted in Masters, yeah.
But it's not likely, when we say not likely to be reprinted, I mean not likely to be reprinted in a standard set, yeah, or something. Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty powerful and disruptive for, yes, what it is.
And similarly, modern card legal that are likely to be reprinted.
Yeah, I mean the ones that are, I guess they're kind of similar, like in the sense that it's quite hard to tell what will and won't be reprinted, and so I guess that doesn't have that much of an effect on it.
Unless it's banned in modern, then it's not likely to be reprinted.
Like
Birthing Pod won't be reprinted anytime soon.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I meant to get hold of Birthing Pods when they got banned.
You can probably still pick them up. Probably still very cheap.
Yeah, because then I could play Nick Fit with Pod.
That's another factor that will affect your card prices. Like if a card is about to get banned or has been banned.
Yeah. Like with the show and tell thing. Like still waiting for it to be banned.
So yeah, there's those sorts of things. Like, in general, you want to try and buy when the supply is at its peak.
Yeah.
And I don't know. We're not talking about selling. We're talking sell when the demand is highest, obviously, if you want to make money out of it. But yeah. So, for example, if you're looking at picking up fetch lands, like as a legacy player, you should probably pick up fetch lands while they're in standard. That's almost essential thing to do.
In fact, to be honest, I think everybody should pick up fetch lands they're in standard.
Yeah.
Even if just for value, because if you sit on them, then they're only going to go up.
Yeah,
There's no way that they're going to decrease in value.
At least until they get reprinted again. But
I mean, but Polluted Delta's hit, was it $75 top?
They were really, really, well, it might have been. I could look it up. got the power.
And so, it will basically, I think it will slowly creep up to about that level again until it gets reprinted, then take another hit, and then slowly creep up again. So, it kind of goes in cycles in that sense, and you can wait until it is right to offload them, if you get a sense for these things.
I mean, a good example would be the Zendikar fetches. Mm. So they are bonkers at the moment. They're still bonkers.
Really?
Yeah, they're still lots of money. Yeah. I think the Onslaught fetches being reprinted took some of the pressure off, but
yeah,
Scalding Tarn is still lots of money. So yeah, the price of a Polluted Delta at the moment is $13.90. The all-time high for standard legal, no. I don't know what the all-time high was. I think it doesn't.
Very high.
Doesn't say.
We'll just stick with very high.
Very high. Very high. Okay. Yeah, I think you might be right. I think it might have even hit $100 on Star City.
Well, yeah, maybe it was £75. Yeah, it is interesting that even this side of the pond, we do tend to work in dollars.
Yeah.
For working out trade prices and things, just because I guess the information is so more readily available in dollars, you can just convert without having to go to pounds for trades and things.
Yes. Okay, so that's we've got a few more examples we could talk about, but that's basically what we thought. Unless
examples are good.
Examples. So okay, so Snapcaster Mage. Let's look up that Snapcaster Mage. So I did stupidly buy a Snapcaster Mage for £20 when it was in standard. On the day of the pre-release, because I wanted to play them in standard, and I.
Yeah, it's amazing the power of shiny things.
It really is.
but this is it.
So this is a card that's playable in all formats apart from Pauper Stew.
What about Peasant?
That too.
What about?
Shut up. Okay, so it was. Pre-ordering for below 20, when it was released, it shot up to about 30, was over $20 the entire time it was in standards. At rotation, it took a massive price hike, which is very interesting.
Wow.
Yeah. When it rotated out of standard, it went down a little bit, and then about a week later, it spiked up to $39.
What happened in that? So something happened in that time period.
This is January
2014. Did the set get released that made it nutty?
I can't remember. This is between Born of the Gods and Journey into Nyx. So,
No.
It's probably.
Yeah, literally nothing happened in that time. For Legacy, anyway.
I think probably there was just a price correction.
Yeah, because it probably should have been higher. Yeah. I mean, it's actually it is hard to speculate. Because you wouldn't expect when it rotates out of standard to go up. I mean, was that when Modern was announced?
No, that was before that. That was like 2012, yeah. I think.
'Cause in the sense that, like, the people trying out Modern would be more inclined to keep them for Modern, if you see what I mean. But
it might have coincided with a Pro Tour.
Oh, yeah, if somebody wants something. Yeah. Yeah, that's also a good indication of something's going to go up if somebody just wants something with it. And it's really interesting because a lot of the coverage goes on very late at night over here.
For us.
Then actually, it's actually sometimes... This is more a Magic Online thing, I think. But it's actually might be possible to buy copies of cards that have done well in Pro Tours very early in the morning the next day.
Don't tell everybody that. That's my secret.
But like it's a thing. Like if you're over here, you might be able to get in before vendors realize how much something is going to go up in price.
Yeah. The other thing
is quite a sneaky one.
It is. I've done that before with Blazing Show. I bought it was in the 2011 in like the first Modern Pro Tour. Blazing Shoal was a deck. I bought up all the copy. I bought 18 copies of it for about 40p each.
Oh wow.
And sold them for £8 each.
Nice. Yeah, it's interesting as well that speculates don't necessarily mean high value cards.
It's not like it's not a good thing to be doing. Like it's
I don't know. Like like I say, I wouldn't recommend it. No. Like, it's interesting that you can. Like some things seem like they should be priced differently.
Like should we give a hint? Should I give a tip? Finance tip to our listeners.
Yeah, go on.
You need to do a bit of research. But if you notice that a card has a higher online price than it does in paper, you should buy the paper price.
Okay.
You should buy the paper card because it will go up.
That's interesting. I don't really know about
There's a few exceptions, like where, like if it's a very old card, like Wasteland or something, where it's not in, but like standard legal cards, they will probably take a price correction.
It's quite interesting that we really set out to not talk about speculating as much as possible. Like, I won't speculate. Yeah. But just to close speculating, like I know somebody who bought 100 copies of Lingering Souls at 50p each. And then they went up to about 250.
Speculating on uncommons is very dangerous.
But like Lingering Souls was clear again. It was clear and it was clear it was going to be nutty. And so. But I mean, that's it. Like he actually made proper money on that. You know? So it is interesting. I tend to not do that myself.
The price of Snapcaster at the moment is $50. Sorry, 43 bucks.
Okay.
So it could be reprinted in Modern Masters 2 as well.
I mean, just to give like a kind of antidote, like antithesis to speculating. Yeah. Like just another interesting financial, I think game almost that you can play. I've not built it up very well. It's actually like it's not very dangerous. Like Pack to Power. Like actually, as a good way of like training yourself to be able to identify cards that are going to move up or down. Because you always need to trade for value. In case somebody doesn't know what it is, basically buy like one of those little 4x4 binders, buy a pack, and the aim is to turn it into a full set of power.
Or a piece of power.
Or a piece of power, Or like you can, you know, set yourself a goal of like a Goyf or something. Mm-hmm. Because the last trade tends to be a trade of a lot of things for like one Goyf or whatever. But actually, like, again, it gets you valuing cards in that sense of, well, I can't really do this uncommon for that uncommon because that's, you know, like it's going to lose value, or it gets you really actively thinking about that stuff, which would be an interesting way to kind of train.
I think it'd be a good challenge. I think you've got to have nice people around you because it does rely on a certain amount of goodwill. Because these days, like, you can't, it's very, I'm not a shark, but it is very difficult to actually take advantage of people these days, which is a good thing because everybody's got a smartphone.
Advocate that, like I'd do it properly.
No, but I mean back in the Wild West.
I would probably still inform them that I was doing Pack to Power because then they tend to be quite generous with you.
Well, they might, or they might say, just no, me my cards are work. But back in the day, like when card prices were printed once a month in the back of Scry and Inquest and like nobody had the internet in their hands, then like actual not you could make a lot of money on knowing card prices and having more knowledge than somebody. It's not the case these days because everybody has a smartphone which is connecting to Star City. To
but even then, people still try and
there's still margin for it because, like, even if you're trading at face value, you know, if you know what the buy list price for a card is, then you still got you know how much you can actually sell that card and actually make money for it.
I mean, it kind of works always because, like, kind of people who are sharking for just trying to rip you off for like your collection basically also have a kind of a use in that they will pretty much buy anything. Like, so I know somebody particularly, like, specifically who worked in a card shop, so he knew the prices of cards really well.
Mm-hmm.
and he kind of allowed himself to have a greatly reduced valuation on his cards because they were literally going to buy all his cards and he just wanted to get rid of them and
okay,
throw the folder in. Yep, do you know what I mean? Like, and so in that sense, if you don't mind kind of being treated as like a wholesaler basically, then that's kind of fine as well.
Like, it that's a whole topic for itself, but like, what is the value of a card? Is it the Star City price? Is it
0.005p or something?
Is it what, because of the value of the card stock that it's printed on in the ink?
Well, probably the transport costs more than
sure. But the point is that I think, like, the card is worth what somebody is willing to pay for it.
Yeah.
It's not worth what Star City sells it
for. And that actually is very important. I would keep that in mind because, again, if you're being patient in building your collection up, actually, like, I didn't get my fourth flooded strand for ages, for ages. And so now I've got, like, one new one. But I looked at the price of it and I was literally like, that card is not worth that money to me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, maybe it's like $60 or something, $70. Like, at absolute worst, I can just throw a Tarn in that slot and it's kind of fine, fetches blue. Like, I mean, it's not perfect, but actually, it's not, you know, I wouldn't spend $60 or $70 to make my deck
better.
A 200th better.
Yeah.
And so actually it genuinely wasn't worth that money to me, and so I just refused to buy them at that price, even when it was unclear that fetches were going to be reprinted or not.
Yeah.
And so really do take stock of what things are worth to you.
Yeah. The point about saying that is that if you want to sell your cards, you've got a number of options available to you. You can chuck it on eBay, you can, like, ask around, and so if somebody wants to give you cash, you can trade it into a store, you can sell it to a buy list, something like that.
Yeah,
but you won't get the Star City price.
Yeah.
You're going to get what somebody is willing to pay for it.
Yeah, which is... I guess the best way to look at Star City games is, like, you can always get it for that price. And so if everything else is really gone to pot, or you can't find one, or you desperately need one for whenever, you can physically get hold of a copy.
Yeah. But which is what the premium that they put on their prices, because they have large availability and a reputation. Yeah.
But if you're prepared to sit on it, and you know there's not a tournament coming up you need the cards for or whatever, you can't borrow them from someone, then actually go to eBay, take your time. Do what I would call value bets if I was playing poker, like, you know, see what works out, see what doesn't.
Yeah.
Is the best way to do it. I do know people who've got in trouble for not really got in trouble with eBay, but actually they were kind of asked to prove that they weren't a business because they were doing so much traffic actually.
Yeah. There's
PayPal can become interested in you. And I don't know the ramifications.
You
of
have
that,
to but. If you do so many transactions, then you actually have to declare yourself as a shop.
Yeah.
So
I mean, it's important to have that on your radar.
Yeah.
And I guess technically, if you're shifting hundreds of pounds cash flow, then you are a shop actually. Like,
You're gonna have to start declaring this for tax purposes. Okay. So, what we thought we'd finish on a couple of things. So, like,
can we finish on? Well, not really finish on, but can we continue with a card that I guarantee is going to never increase in price?
You can.
It's my
Monster of the Week.
Suprassian Skerry.
What? It's not a creature, is it?
Well, technically, I think it's a sailing vessel.
Sapra's and Skerry?
Yeah.
That's a land, isn't it?
No, no. Is yeah, that the blue?
That's the blue.
I know, what am I thinking of?
Well, I don't know, but...
I can tell you exactly what it does. I thought okay. it was Skerry.
Sapra's and Skerry is yeah. a land, I'm sure.
Okay, we're just confirming that it is not
Sapra's.
Because I know what you're thinking of. You're thinking of the dual depletion land. Like, tap to add two blue. Come to play tapped. Remove a counter. That's yeah, Sapra's and yeah. Reef? No. Here's the land. What, type in Sapra's. This is a huge anticlimax, which may or may not make
it to the podcast.
Of course it will. Now I've said that, it's got to.
Saprazan. So we have Saprazan Bailiff.
These cards are all going to be all kinds of jank.
Saprazan Breaker. Saprazan Cove. Saprazan Air.
No, it's none of these things. Liga. I remember Liga. Outrigger. There you go.
Saprazan Outrigger.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. It's a promo version of it.
The promo
there is a promo version.
I've realised that 10 years ago.
It's a foil. No, it's just a foil version.
It looks okay. sweet in any way.
28 cents.
Let me see if I can remember it after all these years.
Mm-hmm.
Two colours, two blue.
No.
What? It's not Abrigadon.
It certainly is.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's four mana, like I said. I'll read it from here just to save it. Three colours, one blue. When Saprassian Outrigger attacks or blocks, put it on top of its owner's library at the end of combat. The Saprassians excelled at both tactics, hit and run. 5-5.
For four mana.
Blue.
It's a Blastoderm.
More importantly than that, it can block a Blastoderm and trade with it.
Yes, it can.
Which was hugely important for my life as a blue mage at the time. And so I'd have two of those on my sideboard.
To block a Blastoderm.
Yeah, literally to block Blastoderm. Well, I was playing Cowardess.
Okay.
Yeah. And Blastoderms have Shroud, so Cowardess doesn't work on them.
No, Blastoderm's
so,
a card.
So you have to windmill slam the Saprassian Outrigger. And everybody would read it and then go, okay, and then deal with it in some mundane fashion.
Like bounce
and then
it
carry
and
on beating you to death. But I think it has a place in my heart as an honorary monster because it is technically a boat.
Okay. It's a creature ship.
It's a creature ship. What an
irony. It can't be a creature ship. It must have been like errata to something else.
No, I bet you it is a ship. There aren't that many ships in Magic, but there are some.
A pirate ship.
Ghost ship. It's probably a ship. A
pirate ship, yeah.
But yeah, so it's a surprise now. We go find one, dust one off, block a Blastoderm with one.
You'll have
all kinds of fun.
In a cube.
Fun probably. Won't even describe what the thing that you're happening.
No, that will not. Fun would not describe.
And the absolute worst is like a 8-turn clock or something. So you have to attack and bounce it.
Oh, that's very funny.
Yeah, so that's mine.
Okay, that's your monster.
Literally, that card was about 20 cents, and I bet it's gone down.
It's 28 cents.
28 cents. Oh, you could have speculated and sat on it for... Oh, yeah, you buy 20,000 of those. You know, suddenly you're sitting on a gold mine.
Oh, my God.
What?
It's not a ship anymore.
Why is it?
It's a merfolk.
A merfolk?
It's a merfolk.
That's crazy talk.
It's because there's merfolk on the ship.
Yeah, well, the Saprassians were like...
Merfolk.
Very blue.
God, 5-5. Give that island walk. And +1/+1. 6/6 island walk.
The old Lord of Atlantis. he could block a Blastoderm and kill the Blastoderm and not die, but it still bounces at the end of turn.
Aethervial. Aethervial on 4.
Want to make your surprise now? We get a real creature.
Yes, yes.
Two-card combo.
Shall I do one?
Yeah, go on.
Here's my...
Monster of the Week.
Monastery Mentor.
Oh, that's so dull.
All right, sorry.
Like in a word, like it can't even kill a Saprassian Outrigger for a start.
Well, it can. It just needs to cast a lot.
But he's actually. Nor is it a monster. Like I think these monsters need a bit more monstrousness in their life.
Do we need to like restrict it to worms, dragons, demons, vampires, that sort of thing?
Yeah, maybe a beast.
Yeah, I just thought it would be quite interesting to look at it in terms of finance. So,
okay. Oh, you've done a thematic
Monster
one that's
week.
Relevant.
Oh, I know.
Oh, I see. I see what you've done there.
That's not at all in the spirit of things. So it.
Oh, really? Tell me more.
It hasn't really seen any play in standard at the moment. It's not gone nuts. It's seeing fringe play a bit. Not really had an opportunity to shine in modern. What didn't break out in the Pro Tour. So it didn't really do anything in modern. It's breaking out slowly in vintage.
Yeah.
Vintage Super League, there's a few decks that showcasing it as a four of as a finisher instead of young Pyromancer. So I think it's got, and it's starting, you mentioned last week that it is starting to see some play in Legacy.
It's on people's consciousness. To be honest, I tend to play unfair decks, and so I don't really have a grasp of how powerful it is.
Yeah.
Because they tap out for it, and then they have to pass the turn, and then they die. Like, and so I don't know what it's like to play Maverick against one. Mm-hmm. Like how horrific that is as an experience.
I've got a couple. Like, so at the moment it's going for about you can pick them up for about 15 quid on eBay. Like maybe 17 quid in shops.
Yeah.
I think it's poised to start rising. It's a mythic in standard, so I think it will start rising a bit.
Interestingly as well, It's only seen, like, in the decks that I'm aware of, it's only a two of, which is nice in the sense that you don't need to, you know, if you did want to have a small speculator, oops, that word again, or, you know, just get a couple while they're quite cheap, then you don't really have to go for the full set.
Yeah.
Although it is possible that it breaks. Like, if it breaks, it'll really go.
If it breaks, it'll go. The thing is, it's not at peak supply at the moment. Like, Khans has been around for a month and a bit, I guess. Mm. I think it's been a month. Has it been a month? Might not have been a month. Might be a month. Just about a month. But more Fate Reforged is going to be opened. It's going to be drafted with Dragons of Tarkir as well. So it's not at the peak supply yet. And it's got upside and downside. If it goes, like, if it starts seeing play, especially in standard, then it will go nuts. But I think it's a good one to have a cheeky speculate on. I think it will be worth money in the long term anyway. I think you'll make your 15 quid back.
Yeah. I don't know. It seems like a good card. Like, if you were going to get them, like, now would be a good time to.
If it could go down a bit more, like,
Who knows how these things turn out. Also, it's possible, like, we didn't really mention with set rotations, but sometimes, like, a set will rotate and a card was, like, a sleeper that was meant to be played with cards basically from the next set in standard. And so, you know, sometimes, like, Monastery Mentor might not have so much play in standard now, but actually it's the kind of card that if the next set they print just one too many cantrips or something, you know, like, suddenly, again, that could see serious standard play.
Yeah, or, like, a token at the moment. Tokens are quite popular, so if tokens you play it in the token deck, but if you didn't play it in the token deck, then it might be better anyway.
Reasons for things.
So that's finance.
I think it's like, it's not an area really where I'm hugely knowledgeable, but
no,
it's interesting. Like, because, again, like, with Legacy, you can take, like, quite a broad view of it and look at it kind of historically and how things have gone. And when people talk about budget concerns, trying to strategically get cards in such a way as to minimize their impact on your finances. Like, I mean, I think that is a thing that is kind of separate from speculation that I can recommend doing.
there's kind of, like, tactics for starting out as well. We've said, like, getting... I think, so if you are looking into playing Legacy, play Legacy, then pick up your set of fetches now while they're in standard.
Yeah, just, I mean, that's safe, that's in the bag.
Just get them. But things that you probably want to consider are at what point you'd want to invest in Wastelands or Force of Wills or Aether Vials, something like that.
Mm. Yeah, because I mean, there's a category of card we haven't really mentioned, I guess, which is just static cards. Like, some cards in Legacy have really kind of just found how much they're worth. You know, like, Aether Vials tend to be about the same price. Forces tend to fluctuate, like, a little bit, like, plus or minus £5 within about, like, kind of £25
about mark. 50 60 bucks, something like that.
Yeah, so, like, maybe 30 35 pounds now. But they've been in that kind of £25 to £35 region for forever. I think they took a spike at about $70 once, but, you know, then they kind of came back down again. So, like, a lot of older Legacy cards, even though they tend to be priced highly, tend to be stable. And again, some cards aren't. Again, it's just knowing your way around which ones do and don't go.
The real ones that are problematic are the jewels, just getting hold of them. But it's not impossible. And think how happy you'll be when you get your first one.
Yeah. Yeah, the first place out of jewels is a good milestone.
Yeah.
Good milestone. Shall I wrap up?
Go on. Think of all the ways you can contact us.
Well, listeners, there's many ways you can contact us. You could leave a message on our Facebook page.
Yep, you could do that.
You could tweet us.
But Stu, how will they know where the Facebook page is?
Well, it's on Facebook.
Yeah.
Look on Facebook for it.
What should they look for?
Legacy Breakfast.
Yeah, on Facebook.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, yeah, that's what I said.
Or they could go to facebook.com/legacybreakfast.
Okay, yeah, they could do that.
Okay.
Twitter. You could do that. You can find us on that, right?
How do you find us on Twitter?
There's a search box. There must be a search box on it. Okay, yeah, we're on there. We're on Legacy Breakfast.
We're at Legacy Breakfast.
Okay, yeah, we're there. Do that to us.
Yeah.
And do we check our Twitter account?
I check it all the time.
I don't check our Twitter account.
I'd never have noticed that.
I don't even know what it is.
What's like, Twitter?
Something to do with Stephen Fry, I think.
That's very true, yeah.
You can send us an email.
Yes.
At legacybreakfast@gmail.com.
Yes!
All right. And you can probably do some other things as well. Do those.
You can come and find us and tell us that you made loads of money by listening to our podcast.
Yeah, if you do, then buy me a mansion.
And give me some money as well.
We don't live in mansions.
No, we don't.
Probably don't speculate on our advice too much.
By the way, we don't make any money off the podcast at all. Other things. There's a tournament this weekend.
Yes.
Don't know if the podcast is going to be up in time, but at Manaleek, quarterly Duellands tournament.
Yeah, Duellands. Yep. Something to do. I don't know what the prize structure is going to be, but it probably will involve some duel or its
cash equivalent.
Well, store credit equivalent.
Yes. Also, GP Liverpool's coming up in 2 weeks.
Oh, yeah. That's I hope I'm free for that. Legacy side events.
That's not a big one. There's like one every day and it's 5 rounds. It's capped at 5 rounds and you get prizes based on record.
Okay. So like just Swiss?
5 rounds of Swiss.
That's all right, then.
If you go 5-0, then you get so many tickets to go to the prize wall and then you get to trade those in for prizes from the prize wall.
Oh, that sounds more complicated than remembering our Twitter address.
Yes. That's there. If you guys are going, come and say hello. We'll probably be playing in a legacy side event somewhere, wandering around.
I'm pretty busy like weekends these days, but I hope so.
Other things too. We didn't mention it. Eternal Weekend. MTG UK Eternal Weekend.
They're doing like Modern on the Friday. Is it Legacy on the Saturday, Vintage Sunday?
Yes, it is.
We'll post the date.
I can't remember the date. I'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah.
It is the UK, MTG UK, National Championships for Legacy, Vintage, and Modern F&M.
You don't even get a plaque.
You do. I think they are going to organise some stuff.
Like, that'd be sweet.
Yeah.
One of those.
Yeah, it's looking like there's over, I think there were 60 people pre-registered last time I looked. I don't know what it is at the moment, but
yeah,
it's going to be quite good.
Yeah, I think they were doing a discount for pre-registering as well if you intended to go.
Yeah, cool.
All right.
We'll see you next week, guys, and we might reverse the roles again.
Did you see what just happened there? All right, bye, guys.
Bye.